DRS meeting, February 8, 2016.
And welcome to the Western Rail Subcommittee meeting. I'm Roger Stanley, the second vice chair. And to my right,
I am William Stedman from Arlington, Virginia. And Zach Crickwich here, or the other vice chair.
Destination first, because then it will not say that the door is open they say that could present a safety problem. And I was hoping the gentleman would be here tonight because I'm sure he would fire back at me with some very good points that we can continue to work on. But he's not here tonight, but we'll have a full presentation on the AAC agenda for March 7, 2016, where we're going to flush this issue out and then let the AAC decide whether to move forward with the recommendation by the member of the public or accept Metro's position that because the announcements are triggered by the door openings for safety reasons, door opening has to be the first thing that customers hear.
All right.
That's a question.
Yeah, the automated part where it says door opening, what would follow that?
Door opening, please step back and allow customers to exit. And then it says, yeah, the general message, but then it says line and destination. But as I use the example, if you're on the green, yellow platform at Gallery Place, and you're blind and the door is open, and you hear that the door is open, you're going to want to get on before the door closes on you. But if you don't know that this is the yellow line and you want the green line, then you could be on the wrong train. I won't know it until at least the next station. So, any other questions? So, again, we'll have a larger discussion about this at the AAC meeting, and we'll let's see where the AAC wants to go with this as far as a recommendation or not to the board.
All right, thank you, Mr. Blake. All right, now I guess since the public hasn't came yet, I guess we'll go to the PIDS display system presentation.
So yes, we're going to have a demonstration of our newest passenger information display system that is being installed at the mini mezzanine. And to lead this discussion, Chief Asante of the Application Systems Specialist from our Rail Operations Control Center IT Department. You going to sit here or going to display on the board? Okay. Thank you, sir.
Can everyone hear me? Yes, can you hear me? All right, great. First of all, thank you for having me. I see a lot of familiar faces. I was here maybe about 2 years ago now. What we wanted to go over was the WMATA Mini Mezzanine PIDS LCD project. I'll start off with a little bit of background. WMATA was tasked with upgrading the passenger information display system, which is the acronym known as PIDS. This was done to accommodate the extension of the Silver Line. In order to do this, we had to update the aging hardware as well as the head-end server equipment. While no changes were going to be made to how the information was displayed, we still saw an opportunity to provide a better user experience with more vibrant display and more content at one time. If you are familiar with this current system, we are currently having three different sign types in our Braille system. The first sign is the four-line LED sign, which we refer to as the iNova PID sign. We also have what we consider the Della sign, which is very similar in the fact that it is also an LED sign. And if you're familiar with the red blinking lights kind of signage, they're very similar in the fact that they all have four lines. What we are talking about today is just a single line PIDS, which is a one line sign that scrolls from left to right. The purpose of this sign is just to display elevator outages within the WMATA system. So if you can see, what we are replacing is the scrolling LED one-line sign with what is behind me, and that is a four-line LCD sign that not only shows train arrival times, but it also displays scroll elevator outages. So the first thing that we had to think of, what was the impact of this change? Currently there are 6 stations with 9 sign locations. And these stations have direct access from the platform to the street. And this is very important, because if you're actually entering or exiting the rail system, you need to determine whether a preceding station that you're going to is going to have elevator access. So what we wanted to do was provide not only a sign that gives you that information, but also other outages such as escalators and train arrival times. These stations are Tenleytown, Judiciary Square, Tacoma Station, Arlington Cemetery, Smithsonian, and Boston. What we did about 2 years ago, we came to you all and gave you all a demo. Now, during this demo, we presented an LCD sign that had a black background with red font and yellow font. What we found was that the red font wasn't advantageous because the contrast ratio wasn't very visible. So what we did is we went around to the various stakeholders, we got some feedback, and we figured out a way that we can improve the system. Also, what we were doing before, where we were having pages that displayed elevator outages and flipped one by one. Also, this wasn't very advantageous because it only gave me one type of message and one particular piece of information. So what we decided to do was come with some enhancements. As you can see, not only did we include the scrolling elevator outages, but we also added train predictions, and emergency service messages. In addition to that, we removed the idea of using red font on a black background, and we decided to add the colors black background with white text to increase the contrast ratio to the highest possible visibility. What I'll do is I'll give you a chance to take a look at the sign if you want to see it in action. You want to come up close and see how you feel about it in real world scenarios, but I'll also give you an opportunity to see and ask any questions at this time.
Ms. Rush?
So, as a blind user, how is that accessible to me?
Well, one of the questions that was asked about 2 years ago was there any audible messages that were available? Unfortunately, we still use the public address system as currently, so those messages still will be provided to someone with lower visibility. But what we have done to enhance the visibility to someone who may not be blind but may just have a limited vision was increase the colors from using the red font, which wasn't very advantageous. We took that to the different stakeholders and we came up with the idea to use white lettering on a black background, which as you can see, for most users, this is a more pleasant user experience.
Okay. Phil, I only had a reference to the chairman. Before Marissa starts, it looks like Ms. Rush had a follow-up. I don't know if you satisfied her question.
No. I understand the contrast for a low-vision person. I want to know about a blind person. I know you said they're gonna. I'm down there waiting for the train, and I'm getting ready to go to another location. Are they gonna tell me that the elevator is not working? Are they gonna announce these things?
Yes, ma'am. The current public address system is still staying in place. So all elevator outages, all emergency service messages will still be announced over the public address system. This is just an added service, where instead of we have the scrolling LED messages, we also have provided additional scrolling LED messages as well as train predictions. So none of the current system is going to be removed. That's still going to stay in place.
I just hear so often that people don't know that the elevators are not in service. We just had a complaint that a user went from one station to another, the elevator's out. And she could see, but there's no announcement that the elevator is out.
Okay, that's something that I would have to, you know, see if I could talk to someone in a different department. However, currently, the way that I understand that is being announced is all emergency messages are displayed, are announced over the public address loudspeaker system, and that will stay and remain the same. Now, for someone who is has disability, we're adding these additional signs so that it will make a user have the ability to make a decision before entering or exiting the rail system.
Okay, Marissa?
My concern goes back to we constantly hear people on our committee who are blind and we don't get the answer. So I understand what you're saying is supposed to happen, and I know you don't, as a person, really have control of it, but I'm here to tell you what's supposed to happen. Most of them is not happening. So if you can relay that to how would it be, that would be extremely helpful. Because I don't want to have you go, because those wrong is one, to find that fit for people who are totally blind, it's still not solving the issue.
And you're making a great point of both you, Marissa, and Ms. Rush. And I'll talk about, because we're going to have some time to do this, so I'll talk about a couple of things we're trying to do, both on the accountability side of my colleagues, but also some of the innovative things we're trying to do to alleviate the very real concern that both of you are raising tonight.
And in addition, I just wanted to stress the fact that today we're not discussing the public address system. This is an added feature in addition to the public address system. So currently there was a gap in the way that information was displayed because of the scrolling content. You guys were only limited to just elevator outages at the location. What we wanted to do was also provide you with elevator outages as well as additional useful information such as train arrival times, escalator outages, any emergency service messages, any type of message that we currently display at within WMATA, we want to be able to provide you that content in addition at those locations. So in this demonstration, if you can see, the bottom portion of the sign still continues to scroll with the elevator outages. That information will never change. That will always be there to let any rider know that an elevator is out at whatever particular station and what shuttle bus is provided from what particular station. But in addition, if you look at the rest in the top remaining portion of the screen, you also get the train prediction times as well. So that was something that we heard and we wanted to benefit you all with as well.
Okay, Bill?
Yeah, I had a comment about the upper portion of the screen and the lower portion of the screen. They're both the gray horizontal fields. However, they have different information. The lower one scrolls, top one is static, but they have the same background, which is disorienting. And the background being gray rather than black also decreases the contrast ratio. And the scrolling information is on the bottom in the grid, so it's harder to read, but it's more frequent. And the other words don't change as frequently. So the scrolling does not make too much sense that it's hard to read and it changes. That doesn't make sense. And looking at this screen, which is right here, and I can see it while it's still, doesn't do this material. I look at the picture of it up there, where on the wall, where you have the background looks almost blue, and the bottom background, I cannot read the words there. I cannot see the words, but I can see the static word, logo, pretty well.
Correct.
Well, and the lines are destination, that's standard. But again, that does not move. And look at an active one, you look at one that does not move, and one of them is seeing background, then you should build one that's blue, or you should the one that's not moving to blue, because they both have the same background.
Correct. So what you're seeing in the picture, because of the blue tint of the screen, it's going to look a little bit more blue than the actual natural black. Now, the decision that was made to have the gray banding on the bottom and the top was to differentiate the header also from the bottom scrolling portion. Now, the contrast ratio isn't as substantial as the black against the white, the white against the black. But however, we did take into account that we wanted to make it much greater than what the previous iteration, which was red against the black, because that was definitely hard to
see. Clearly, there are at least three color options. So why did you choose both to be the same?
Oh, as far as the lettering?
Yeah, why from the top?
Only
no, not the lettering, the field. The field of the bottom.
Okay.
Scroll field in the field on top, which is a touch scroll, why do they look the same?
The only reason is because the gray and the black with the white lettering produces the highest contrast ratio than any other combination that we have.
The black and white do.
Correct, but we had to do.
Then you put them in gray and white, which was my point.
Understandable.
It's the highest contrasted black and white. Why are you putting them both in gray and white?
Just to answer your question, the reason that it's different is to separate the different types of messages. So where you see...
That was my other point.
Yes, okay.
Is that they're not very different what the messages are. The information on the gray field on the bottom, the scrolling is really different. The information on the top is not something different. But they're still in the same gray field.
So let me just ask a question, just for clarification. Okay, I'm looking at the sign, and again, this is from a person with vision, so we're going to talk about people who are blind and low vision a little later. And I see a question, and I know the chair, the co-chair, see a question. The title board at the top, and I'm just asking this, talking to this AAC member and asking you, given that at the top, what I would call the title row or the title header, since that title header is related to the lines, car, and destination and how much time, since it's related to that middle portion, would we be saying that, and I do agree that the number of rail cars and the destination are very, very critical. So we got to have that at the highest contrast. Is it possible, or maybe this is what William's asking, to keep those two things together, you change the top background to black and white because it relates to the middle, while keeping the gray and white background at the bottom, since that's a kind of different messaging than with the two, if we consider those three rows, if you will, three rows like an Excel spreadsheet, the top two rows relate to one another, where the third row is a different one. Should the top row be black with white lettering to relate to the second row?
Okay, that is something that we can't take into consideration. That would just be a software change on the back end, and maybe in the future, a future iteration of the DID system, we can combine the top portion to all black. With white letters.
And so let's say, Ms. Williams, that what you were suggesting?
Yeah, I think that was a good interpretation of what I was saying.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just get it. Hi, everybody. This is Brian Miller. Thanks for getting everything started. I'm Roger and William. Christian, can you remind me what slide we're on, by the way?
Which slide are we on? Oh, I think we're done with the slides.
That was the slides, okay. That's
yeah, we're on to kind of demonstrate the opinion itself.
Okay. We have Philippa, then Doris has got a question. So Philippa, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say, as a person with low vision, that those colors are an immense improvement over the red and black I see it well. My only question is, where exactly is this? Is it going to be 20 feet in the air, which would negate its
great question. So currently we have 9 different locations and 6 stations where the elevators exit directly to the street. And I don't know if you're familiar with seeing a scrolling one-line LED sign. They're mounted to the columns mostly, and they are ceiling mounted, as you would. So they will be up a little bit higher, but these are going to be a direct replacement for those. So they will be more related to the ceiling mounts and the columns that are in the
platforms.
Yes, these are correct. These are on the platforms before you go through the gate. So that way you have a clear indication to make a decision if you're going to enter the rail system based on a shuttle service that may not or may be provided to you.
Thank you, Philippa. Doris.
So this is going to replace the platform pits, is what I just heard, right?
No, they're just going to...
Excuse me for saying it wrongly. I meant the mezzanine pits.
Correct.
Right.
Well, not the mezzanine as far as where the station manager kiosks are located. These are just, if you can go back one slide, maybe...
Well, like in courthouse, there's one right after you come off the elevator, right?
Yes. So if you're able to see the screen right now...
I'm in Paris.
And just...
Mr. Chairman. I'm not able to see it.
Okay.
Excuse me, one second. Just to help Mr. Chairman, which slide number is he referencing? I believe this is slide... One, two, three, four.
Three.
This is slide one.
Terrific, thank you. And just a reminder, I guess we have an interpreter today, so we'd all be careful not to interrupt each other. That'd be helpful for the interpreter. Do we have an interpreter?
Yes.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Go ahead, Doris.
I'm just asking that point as clarification for what I'm talking about, what I wanted to address. Okay. I agree with Mr. Staderman and the other comments. What I would say, and particularly where the thing is mounted, as was just said, makes the difference between whether this is in any way useful for somebody who has low vision or vision impairment, but significant residual vision. So. And its contrast, and the highest contrast, as you said, is white lettering on black, but so is amber on black, or certain colors of blue with a bright contrasting white. So having said that also, is this going to have an audible feature?
That question was already addressed earlier. As far as the audible feature, there will not be. The public address will continue to serve that audible announcement as currently it does. So there will be no changes made to that.
Well, I was saying to you, it's not equally effective then, because this is to give you a decision point before you get into the subject. And that's the whole purpose of it being there. And actually today, for me, it was a big demonstration, because I have a vision impairment, but I also have a broken foot. And so consequently, this is my first time through in 5 weeks on the subway, and I knew that I had to use those elevators because I couldn't, with the cast on my foot, take any chances using the escalators. And when I went into the subway, I thought to myself, now how the hell am I going to know when I get up to Judiciary Square whether the elevators are working, or whether I'm going to be stuck with coming up on an escalator. So
there are circumstances in which people are going to need access if they have temporary disabilities or whatever, who might not normally have a mobility impairment, or if they're seniors and have a vision impairment. So I think providing that equally effective communication is just a requirement of the ADA. And to believe that the station announcements aren't it. And so, so for a variety of reasons, including the decision point outside of the gates. So I think that it's imperative for the authority to start considering that.
It's a very short point.
Christian, were you going to respond, or Mr. Sutton?
No, I want to just say thank Doris as well as Ms. Rush before her and Ms. Marissa. This is a very fair point you're bringing up, and again, these are added enhancements, not the primary, but as you point out, we want to improve the public access information or provide an alternative, and we'll talk a little more about that if we have some more time.
And safety, too.
Yes, ma'am.
And I look forward to hearing more about that, because I do concur with my colleagues on the panel and the committee that there does seem to be a lack of parity between the display items on the bids and the audio announcements. So I look forward to hearing more about that. Chris, we'll make time. We're running early, I think, so far, I think we're running good shape. Are there other questions at this time? Tony, yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tony Stevens from College Park. Sorry, I was a little late this afternoon. So I missed the first part of the presentation. I'm curious to know, and it sounds like the audible question was brought up before, but I want to talk a little bit about the future and these machines, these displays being put into stations, in a sense, kind of shelf life, and is there a way to adapt in other technologies, for instance, and this is a question I should have always had. Does WMATA put out its own app, or is everything I've got on my phone from another contractor, somebody that develops applications for mobile communications for folks on the go with their app? Is there a way to tie in this display to any type of mobile communications? Is there a way, does this have Bluetooth, such in a way that maybe sensors can be used using Bluetooth to also key into the screen? Or even into the future, if someday we do have an automated system that also relays whatever's on any type of communications, you know, what's the shelf life on this? We're looking down the road, and is it capable of building in other communication devices or other means of communication throughout the system?
That is actually a really great question. Currently, at this time, there isn't the ability to add audio to this specific unit, but what we are looking at doing is, you know, in the future, how can we expand the system to make it more robust? And that's something that we can take back and, you know, take a look at as far as the audio. As far as the question that you had about the apps, most of the apps that are giving you train predictions are third-party developers. They get the APIs from WMATA, and then they develop their apps and, you know, use the predictions and the display information, which will coincide with the predictions that you see on the tracks and the trains. I know you said you were a little late. This particular sign is just supposed to replace the current scrolling single-line elevator outlets. What we wanted to do was also provide additional information, and if audio is something that we can talk to the sign manufacturer about potentially adding to future iterations of this, that's something that we definitely, you know, would like to look at and expand into in the future. Did that answer your question?
It did, yes. I'm thinking of Ogilvie Station in Chicago, where you can go by the tracks, and then their displays are audible, or at least letting you know what track things are at. It'd be interesting with, you know, I don't know how you're sourcing these screens, but in theory, you know, Samsung and other technology communication folks that make flat screen displays have been making those screens more built out so that they can be accessible and say what's coming up on the screen. So in terms of software. So, you know, perhaps we could have a conversation offline on identifying just what the machine is and how you have, you know, some of the technical background.
And just real quick, that is a good point, and that's something that I would like to talk to the manufacturer about. Maybe potentially having some type of Bluetooth enabled inside of the display, and maybe sent to someone's smartphone for an audible transaction or something personal where they can actually hear what's being displayed for them.
So this is Ryan, and just to add to what Tony was saying, that, you know, I spent a lot of time in San Francisco, and their heart system, as most of you are probably aware, has audible announcements of the train arrival and train length information that's made visually available. So, you know, that information is on the tracks, you know, or on the, you know, the platform as you're waiting. And it's very helpful to know, especially during off-peak hours. During rush hour, I don't care that much, but, you know, a Saturday or a Sunday, it's nice to know if it's going to be 3 minutes or 15, 20 or whatever. Let me ask a question, though. Is the PIDs that are on the mezzanines, as you've described them, distinctly different machines than those that are on that are displaying train information on the track, on the platforms? Are those different machines, or are they the same machine?
They're different in the sense that the ones that are currently on the tracks displaying information on the full PIDs is a LED sign, which of course is just the pixels on the red dot sign. And this is a LCD sign, which is a liquid crystal display, similar to what most people have in their homes nowadays. The issue with the audio was that this is a serious sign because we're dealing with subway tunnels and track dust. We had to have a sealed sign, so the ability to add speakers was a little bit limited. But I did like the suggestion of potentially adding Bluetooth features or capabilities that maybe can be sent to someone's personal handheld device, like a smartphone or something. And this is something that we can talk about in the future, as future iterations of this project develop.
Thank you. I mean, in that future is pretty much now, in a way, you know, that you go to San Francisco International Airport, you may have these Bluetooth markers all up throughout the airport, you know, giving you information, you know, pinging to your smartphone device, all sorts of things, you know, that you may be looking for, from, you know, restaurants to restaurants to gain information, that sort of thing. So that's a technology that works well in environments where connectivity may be problematic. That's one of the challenges that we face here with the apps on our smartphones. You know, they're dependent on the connectivity, and, you know, so you go to a station that doesn't have it, you're out of luck, and you only have the bids to rely on. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you, Denise. Thank you.
How long have we been?
And then Doris.
Using Metro. WMATA, that we have to be presented anything that is not accessible is unacceptable. It's been too long. You know that people who need accessibility are right at the system, and the system has been working. You should not even purchase something that is not accessible at this point, at this day and time. It's an embarrassment.
Thank you, Denise. Doris.
I guess the first time I associated myself with Ms. Rush is something. I wanted to know, two technical things. One is that LCD, I think you should test this out in some kind of real time, because LCD is not really accessible, and if there's a distance between you and the side, the contrast is already diminished, and contrast is diminished. That's why LED is definitely the far more accessible of the signage choices. And then I also want to say that as a blind writer in the system, I feel the need to say that, you know, when I am looking for information, and you were talking about what to leave up there or something like that, I need the train, this is only on the train arrival information, I need the train arrival
and I need to know the line, like color or destination, and or destination. And I, but I really don't need to know how many train cars there are. I really don't need to know that. Maybe there's some in here who do for some reason that I don't, but I really don't need to know how many cars are in the train.
Thank you.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, yeah, please.
I mean, as a traveler, the travelers should have been able to pay.
No, I got you, and that's fair. I must admit, you know, just myself, I think I'm a little different in that regard, because if I had a favorite boarding location on a platform, but my boarding requires an 8-car train, not a 6-car train, I do need to know that. But not to belabor that point, but I want to just ask a couple of clarifying questions of my colleague, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Because again, I totally respect what Ms. Rush is saying, but I want to make sure we're not, in a sense, for lack of a better term, mixing apples with oranges in this regard. The mini mezzanine displays that we're displaying tonight to the members of the AAC Bus Rail Subcommittee, these are replacing existing mini mezzanine signage or displays, correct? And in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, if you don't, even if you don't replace it, there's the visual that's currently there and the audio. And I heard again, we'll talk about some of the improvements that we're trying to facilitate from an access standpoint, but in compliance with the ADA, there is a public address announcement that's in coordination or conjunction with the visual displays that are already there.
Not for this.
Hear me out. What these displays are doing, these displays, what's on there currently, are displays about elevator outages, correct?
Yes.
So these displays are remaining, and in conjunction with those elevator outage displays, there is the public address announcement for people who are blind or low vision. Yes, this is an enhancement to that aspect because it does give you the train, line, and car. But that doesn't change the original purpose of these displays, which is to give the customer a determining point to decide whether or not to go into the platform or to request shuttle service. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to make sure before we get into my discussion after this presentation about some things we're trying to do to improve the audio aspect, I want to make sure, because whenever I hear a violation of the ADA, et cetera, we like to just try to make sure we're all on the same page.
But I would say, Mr. Blake, also that, but to be equally effective communication, if I am in circumstance, for example, that I'm in today, and I'm only going from Courthouse to Clarendon or to Roslyn, okay, or something like that, one station, I have to know before I go through those turnstiles. I need that information just as much as somebody else, because I'll get there and I know about it. Mm-hmm. Or, and I'll get inside the gates. See, it's one thing when you're on the inside and you're already committed. So that's why I say it is an issue of equally effective
And we agree, and again, what I'm saying though is before this new display goes into the system, today there is a display that would tell you whether or not you should go in or not visually, and to be in compliance, there's an audio announcement. But again, as Ms. Rush, as yourself, and Ms. Marissa have said, there are some shortcomings in your opinions with regard to that, and that's a separate subject.
But you might not hear that.
No, that's my point, and we're going to get to that. But that's not to say that these signs themselves, the installation of these signs, triggers a line that would then put Metro out of compliance. I just wanted to kind of clarify that.
The only other thing that I forgot to say was that that making signs that are flat screen or touch screen audible. There is technology that has been out since 1992. I used to work at the Able Data Project for National Visualization Information Center, and that technology was out as early as that.
Thank you very much, Doris. Darnese, Tony, was that Darnese?
I wanted to say that I do need to know the car, how many cars the train has, and what your elevators are out when I use a motorized scooter, when I use a walker, for people that are mobility challenged, because the platform is usually crowded, and if you use a chair, you try to get to a certain spot where you know which train is coming. So, and then as for the elevator outage, since this is shown also at the kiosk, you can order your shuttle right then at the kiosk, so it'll be there. So I do need that information.
Thank you very much, Tony. Tony, I think you're ready.
This is a question, maybe Mr. Chair, Ryan, you might have an answer as well. First, just a quick comment on what we've been sort of talking about before, and I think of this as an opportunity to go, you know, to baby step. Is it better than what we had before? Yes, for some people that can be able to see that distance, but the contrast would be better. More information is good, you know, so it's a baby step. What would be great, I also think of it as a portal of information. Somehow there's that information going to that screen. That information is coming from somewhere. How can we get it to more people? That's the question, right? How can we get it to more
people? I'm going to answer that once this is. Let me
frame it, and Mr. Chair, this is for you, in ways that maybe how can we engage our larger committee and the RAC? You know, years ago in New York City, if you heard the L train coming on 14th Street, it was the New York Marathon for people racing to get to that train, only to find out it's going the other direction. But it was when they put in the audible announcements that were somehow tied to the information on screen saying the next train will be arriving in 2 minutes, you know, the next Brooklyn bound train or whatever it is. You know, this is information is coming and going into the station now. The question I have when you talk about, you know, checking out the manufacturer, if it's already there, how can we get it in some sort of system that helps all riders? You know, this is an issue that ultimately can help all riders for safety. We know too often with our system, a train's coming in and there's those mad dashes up the escalators for folks trying to get to a train, only to find out it's on the other side, you know. Or you're making that mad dash thinking the Reddit gallery is going to be 6 cars. Oh, isn't it wonderful when it's 8 cars and you don't have to beat through the crowd to get to that 6th car when you're coming up from the green line. So, you know, how can we maybe engage the RAC, Mr. Chair, in a way to talk about, you know, making baby steps to toddler steps or kid steps that can help all riders, but significantly help those of us with visual impairments or other sensory impairments that rely on that information.
Thank you, Jeremy. I don't know if this is probably a good time here to move forward into that conversation you referenced.
Well, I'm chomping at the bit here, but Mr. Asante, I don't want to, you know, yes, take too much of your presentation. I'm looking, I'm just trying to see the time.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have much more to talk about? But you're not leaving right away.
No,
can you stay for a little bit?
No.
Okay.
And I just want to reiterate,
please,
that when we were here maybe 2 years ago, we did give a demonstration and we did take your concerns into consideration. And as you can see, we've addressed majority of those. Now, the separate issues such as the audio and those types of features are things that we also would tend to explore in the future as well. And as you said, it is an improvement over the current system, and in future iterations, we would love to continue to improve and meet with you all. So I do thank you for your time, and we do want you to know that we're taking into consideration everything that you are saying.
And just thank you, and Christian, you.
Yeah, so let's talk about.
Well, hang on 1 second, though, because I think Dr. Russell, we had something to look at before we get to that. Sorry.
I have one little extra comment. We were talking about the top line, the headline being in correlation with the middle line, but the spacing is off. Like, Largo is front to the left in destination. The six out of the Garden Center, the blue on the line is on the right. It would make sense that it would be much more obvious they related if they were physically related, if they were actually in line in the same space. And I think that would be quite easy fix. Just an addition of a tab or a space or whatever between the number and the destination to go along with the label on top.
So with the current spacing that you see here, it's exactly as it is in the full pins. If we were to go back a slide or two, I can show you. However, when we have a longer station, such as Noma Gyalgi Dat, it actually makes more sense. So the slide that we have up now, it shows the different variations of the three types of signs. And if you look at the current installation, which is the Inova pit sign, the destination is also to the left of how the station is spelled out. And that's due to longer station names have to fit into that box as well. So we didn't make any changes. We just enhanced and did exactly what you see in the current full line pins. So there were no changes when we did this.
Thank you. Okay, so I think we can maybe move on. Christian, if you're ready to glimpse of our Christmas future or something.
Yes. So let's start with one piece that I know causes some heartache for consternation or heartache for some of our members because everyone doesn't own a smartphone. So I'm going to start with that and then we recognize that. But given the numbers, one of the easiest ways to increase accessibility or the availability of information is, and one of the most economically feasible ways to do so is the use of the number of smartphones that people do have. And as folks continue to get more and more access to these smartphones. Even, I know I'm researching some things we're trying to do. Some people may call it this name as a bad word, but I affectionately refer to them as the Obama phones. There are a lot of phones being provided to people of great means and of little means. So I started that, but I do recognize this is not a universal solution for everybody. So I'm clarifying that as a preface. But one of the things we're doing is working with these third-party application providers. Now, Anthony Stevens, I mean, he must have been reading my mind. Next week, there's going to be a meeting. It's being organized by our planning department where they're bringing in or they're inviting everyone who has or is interested in developing apps utilizing data provided by Metro. So I'm going to be there. There'll be some presentations by current app developers, but I'm going to be there advocating that these individuals consider using or utilizing a great portion of their resources and time to tap this very rich market known as people with disabilities. And Metro, yeah, and I think to answer Anthony's question, I could be wrong, so I don't want to disagree with you. I'm not aware, and again, I could be wrong, I'm not aware of any Metro-specific app owned and operated and developed by Metro. All of the apps I'm aware of are third-party apps. I could be wrong with that, but I believe they all are right now. But the data that will feed this information into the PIDs, into the new PIDs on the mini mezzanines that are being displayed today, can easily, in my opinion, be fed to a third party who can then relay that information to a smartphone application. So that's step one. That's just the first one. So before I go on with more of that, I see Anthony raised his hand. So you want to go ahead, Mr. Chairman? What
did
I ask?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just comment on that real quick, Mr. Chairman? Go ahead, sir. I mean, my hope is that all the developers please mention 508 compliance.
Oh, yes.
Anything you mentioned next week. Because some apps are good and some apps are great. I found myself going to one app for the train and another app for my bus.
Yes.
Bring it home, though. $100, $200 Bluetooth speakers you can find that are built like a tank, or Wi-Fi speakers. You know, the same information we're giving to developers, you can give to yourself. A 16-year-old can take the API information and figure out how to get whatever's going to that PID screen and make it talk into a speaker that could be placed. All you need is a power source. So what can we do, too, internally to think about the same information we're giving to app developers, we could also use internally and just reroute, you know, it's all just information going from point A to point B. How can we take that information and then channel it to a speaker that's right before you get on the escalator, you know? You ride escalator that says, please, why, you know, the airport or something, they're always telling you, watch out for the end of the platform or whatever. Mm-hmm. Can't they also say, the next train arriving is this, the next, we're by the elevator, this is the elevator, you know, something, you walk through a turnstile, somewhere in the station. It's not rocket science we're talking about. So can we use the information ourselves that we're giving for folks that give away these free apps? So, and maybe they can develop something or something. I don't know. You know, it's not that hard to think of trying to create.
It's a philosophical question. I think this then becomes a decision of the AAC whether or not to recommend Metro go in that direction or not. Let me give you just a quick story from my prior experience. At MTA, we decided, but there was a decision made to do just as you say, not give out the data. In fact, I was like the rebel in the room because I'm saying if it's taking us this long to develop a quality app that we are comfortable with, that we feel meets a certain standard, then let's give out the data and allow the market to produce it. That was a decision that was not accepted at MTA, and I think finally last year, MTA finally had an app that could tell you next bus arrival, etc. And even when it was released, there was some criticism. It's not a criticism of my former college, but that was a decision made. Metro, when I arrived here at Metro in 2012, because a decision was made, or in part because a decision was made to share Metro's data as opposed to Metro trying to do it itself, there was a plethora of apps people can choose from for a host of information related to the services. Now, if the AAC wants to recommend, you know, beginning from the BRS to the AAC full committee, wants to recommend to the board that Metro considers developing its own app, I think that's fair if that's a decision you all want to make. I think I would just say, let's look at what we want. What is the information we're trying to get? And the information that we're talking about tonight is something we're trying to get to as many customers as possible in as many ways as possible. And my own personal, this is just Chris Blake personal viewpoint, is I'm not focused on it being Metro or Joe Blow apps. I'm focused on quality, accessibility, and availability as soon as possible.
Well, let me clarify real quick, Mr. Blinken. What we're talking about are internet applications for the world of consumers. And I'm all for competition in the sense that it can create new ways to present information and things like that. This is an intranet solution, I think, that could be solved using similar development that the app makers use to get communication devices to talk from your the PID screen that was the focus of today to another device in the station. That information is coming in. How can you talk to another device in the station that at that point then is audible? So it's an intranet. It would be a metro internal use type device.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. We'll get to that one in a second. I have another piece on that, but on the apps, on the smartphone. So let's just focus first on the smartphone. That was the first one. Again, it's up to the AEC, but if you're saying that's not necessarily what your focus is on the apps, I think that's a big part. So that's step one. And again, I'm going to be lobbying, for the lack of a better word, encouraging these app developers to look at the rich market, known as people with disabilities, take advantage of all this information and create something unique in this regard. So that's the smartphone app. Step two, or you have a question, Doris, on the smartphone app?
Just a comment. Am I on? Yeah. Okay. So the comment is that one thing in prioritizing, I think that we should take into account is whether this will get to all customers that need access, particularly to as an alternative, and consequently, you know, there was one point where the WMATA was looking at a technology that was called talking signs, and one of the difficulties that some in the disability community had with it, in fact, in blind community, was that it was only for those who would have that device in hand, and therefore not fully accessible. You know, if you came to the station without your smartphone for whatever reason, or if you know you were visiting in town and you didn't have whatever, or if you just didn't have one, or if you didn't have the right time. So I think keeping in mind that it, you know, that's like, and I'm going to make an analogy, and I hope everybody will understand my analogies, but it may not be a perfect analogy.
With the doors.
But the analogy is, you know, that's like saying you need to bring your own ramp to the station.
So that's one area we're trying to do. We're looking at technology. We're looking at the access to technology and that growing access and feasibility. So smartphones give us the quickest, easiest, and most economical way to get to the most people as possible. So step two. Another aspect of this is, if you go over to the Gallery Place station, some of you may have noticed, now our marketing department is using this right now as an advertising, but as a means of testing. So let me clarify, this is not a station display sign per se. We're testing that information, but it's really a marketing sign. If you go inside our Gallery Place station, some of you may have noticed, depending on how you, if you're walking in, it's off to your left. If you're walking out, it'll be to your right. A big video television looking screen that has advertisements that jump in and out. I don't know, have any of you been to Gallery Place and seen this sign? You seen it, Philippa?
Is that the F Street entrance, Mr.
Blake? S Street. Okay. There is one there, but there's also one as you're walking down past Verizon's entrance. That's the S Street entrance. Okay, yes. I'm still going to DC, sorry. So, yes, if you, now this is inside the gates. So either you've already been on the system and you're accident, or you're going into the system. So it doesn't do exactly what this sign is intended to do, because right now it's just really for advertising. But it does have some rail information on it. It's a touch screen, so you can touch it, map displays, you can get schedule information and things like that. That's the pilot of it. What we're working on with our marketing team, and if marketing needs too much space and the advertising takes over too much of that, we can get separate ones. These will become signs that anyone without a smartphone, without any other technology, can walk up to. Those with vision can see the information, touch it, and get all of the information. And those without vision, there's going to be an audio aspect to it as well. Now, this is going to take a little bit of time, and this is more of a challenge and a little more costly and things to do. But what we're trying to do is cover as many people as possible with the low-hanging fruit technology, and then where there's technology such as the sign, where perhaps the advertising will pay for it itself, and that's one of the things we're also trying to consider. Well, there will be, it's a touchscreen display, giving travel information, and it will eventually be allowed to provide audio information, and will have braille, raised lettering, so you can easily utilize the feature. So to first get any kind of first-hand experience with it, when you go to the Gallery Place station, it's down there, it's inside the gates once you pass the kiosk, and you can see perhaps the future of, at least another aspect of the future of travel information that is free of any third-party device, etc.
And I'm sorry, Chris, just to clarify, so is that display currently just visual right now?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Correct. Yes. Because it's, and just for the legal clarification, I know you all aren't chomping out something, but just for the legal clarification, it is an advertising display sign, and as you know, advertising, you got it, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Let me get that. Mr. Butler, go ahead, Tony. Sorry. Yeah.
But this is—it's an advertising now, but I'm very excited about the potential that it could hold.
It has a lot of great potential.
I hope that we can continue to engage on that particular theme, perhaps get out of the benchmark of sooner than later.
And I see Doris has her hand up. I see Ms. Rush has her hand up. Ms. Bush. And I would just say, if I had my preference as to what the AAC would advocate to the board for, I would say less so on the apps and more so encouraging Metro's board and the agency to continue to invest in these devices, inclusive of audio availability for rail information outside the gates, so that everyone can use it regardless of what technology they have at their own personal disposal.
Thank you. And I know we have some hands up, but I just wanted to ask before we move on, do you have some other things you want to, you said smartphone apps.
Yeah, well, there's one more.
Yeah, what's the next one? Let's get into the three.
Yeah, the last one also includes a smartphone app, but it's one you all are already aware of, and that's the Click and Go. And what we're trying to do there, we're taking seven of our first 10 stations in which the maps were developed, and we're going to be installing beacons in seven of those stations. And what the beacons will do is provide you with safety information, advertising as well, but also wayfinding. And so, as we can provide wayfinding, we can provide emergency, we can provide advertising, you certainly can provide elevator outage and other pertinent information through these devices as well. And that's that should be underway certainly before the middle, and definitely before the end of this current calendar year.
Thank you. So I think we had Ms. Rush first, and then Ms. Ray, and then Ms. Bush. So Denise, you want to go first?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
I represent the public that doesn't have money to catch metro access to go to dialysis. So anything with an iPhone, smartphone, any phone, anything they have to purchase, they're just trying to get the dialysis. So I don't recommend. There are many people who have smartphones and apps. Those are great. But for the public that I represent, anything that they have to buy, they can't afford to buy. I'm helping them pay to go to dialysis.
Same thing, Doris.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, remember earlier I mentioned that there had been some work as early as the early 90s on touchscreen audio access. And they were doing that at the University of Wisconsin, I believe at Madison, and the guys who shot was doing this was a Rehabilitation Engineering Center headed by a guy named Greg Vanderheiden. And it occurred to me that pulling that sector in, because I know that I believe also Mississippi State might be interested in something like this, pulling that system in to devise something that might be prototype of the nature of the second option that you were talking about with the sign, I think might be a worthwhile path to at least explore, and I agree with you that that would be exploring something that would provide an accessible feature that's right there, readily available. And the other reason why I think it's apropos is because in recent contact, not about anything with Metro, but rather about commercial buildings which are now sporting directories that are touchscreens built into their walls. And so anything like that, of that nature, that's not readily movable, is something that the U.S. Department of Justice, since the Obama administration has been in, is enforcing like no one had before. The concept that the ADA covers information access. And so consequently, when I made my inquiry about these directory things, what they said is it technically it would be covered in the same way that a built-in ATM machine would be covered, in that it would have to be accessible through speech and be equal, provide equally effective communication. It wouldn't matter whether it was actually using the touch screen or adding to it, you know, a speaker in some form of keyboard or whatever. So I think that's a really good direction.
Thank you very much, Doris. 30s, I think you were next. Then that's your chance to respond.
Yeah. My comments are basically take into account those of Doris and Denise. If you want people to be really creative, usually you have to pay them, but if you could come up with some kind of scholarship, internship for high school and college students for a period of time, you know, or assist them in getting the equipment they need to explore with. I mean, I think that you'd be on to something. Like she said, Mississippi State, but the college probably pays for the equipment or whatever. But if you could offer somebody like a 6-week internship or something like that, you would collaborate with a school and maybe access board or, you know, Department of Justice or something like that.
And have charity.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know.
And FCA said that, Doris.
FCA, yeah. Because I don't know whether you were at that, but what was it, last spring or something? At the Mayflower, it was big workshop.
Yeah, they did. Sorry, you skipped the 3-week pitch, I'm sorry.
Yeah, basically, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry, I just wanted to make sure you had a chance to finish up there. Does Blake want to respond to any of that, or are you just taking it on?
I think going from the last, the closest I remember. No, I think the idea of the internship is a great idea. We do have an active internship program. I think we can encourage that. I do know as far as the apps are concerned, one of the ways that people do make money without us necessarily paying them is through advertising. And that's always the whole thing. And I guess that could also be a question. Should you be a person with a disability have to listen to a McDonald's McDonald's not the one. They're Big Mac. Burger King or Whoppers and all this other kind of stuff just to know if an elevator is out. That's a very fair question. And maybe that will be the one we have to do. So the point is, though, I think the intern is a great idea. We're going to encourage our app developers, and let's see what their answers are. On the issue of the beacons, we have not been, and when I say we, I'm talking access services in this case, have not been rushing to the door to throw advertisements on there, because that's not really our focus, but we do have colleagues and you know how that works. So, but that would be one area where you probably won't have to deal with too much of that. In reference to Ms. Rush, in terms of the economic impact, you know, I'm with you right there. I totally understand. Like I said, the long phone isn't the answer for everybody either, right? And I get that. So we're not trying to put all of our eggs in one basket, but we are trying to cover as many customers as feasibly possible through an array of options.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just to circle back to, I think Tony had mentioned this, which is just thinking about some of the simplest ways to approach this, which is just having these things announced. That's what they did. It's a synthesized voice that does it in the PART system. Somehow that patched into their dispatch service that feeds those signs and say, you know, 8-car train to Richmond in 10 minutes, you know, and then that comes out in a synthesized voice. You know, it sounds a little bit funky, but for those of us who are used to that, you know, we get used to that pretty quickly. And it's no problem, and it's usually, with rare exceptions, very easy to understand and audible, and gives you the information you need. It gives you the time, the destination, and the length of the train. And it's just, I mean, I'm just wondering, I'm all about letting 1,000 flowers bloom with apps and, you know, advertisements and, jugglers, whatever it takes. But I'd also want to just kind of, you know, check in with you to see, have we abandoned the notion of just having those things announced?
Particularly
the platform, I'm sorry to interrupt, but particularly the platform level stuff, because I know we've talked a lot about the mezzanine stuff, and I appreciate the distinction there. I appreciate that. But particularly the platform stuff, which I think for most of us is, you know, apart from elevator outages and things, that is really critical.
My question kind of piggybacks on this. I just wanted to know, I know this is pedestrian compared to touchscreens and smartphone apps and so forth, but I'm just curious, what is that system at some of the bus stops where I just push a button and it tells me when the next bus is coming?
Well, you beat me right to it, because what I was about to say is, I won't say from the access standpoint that we've abandoned the notion of, let's just take the displays that are on display tonight, the display that's on display tonight, or even the platform one. I would say it hasn't really been part of a strategy I've been involved in, let's put it that way. But I certainly can look at it, and then going back to the point Philippa is making and where I would go with this, we just opened the Paul Sarbanes Silver Spring Transit Center. And at every bus bay, there is a push button for audio of information of what bus bay you are at and other information related to that particular bus bay. You say it's great?
That is great.
Okay.
Oh, you're doing it. Okay, great.
On the mic is great.
Excellent.
Does it give you a Big Mac advertisement?
No.
It makes the five-year wait for
it. Yeah, it makes the five-year wait for it.
But your chicken McNuggets plus your bus is coming.
So that is bad. So I will say we've abandoned it. Let me just say I'll put it on my plate. And let's look at it. I can't say I'll talk to my colleagues. I know Chase has always been a welcoming and open colleague, and there are others who are involved in this. Why couldn't we just probably put a push button there that may be connected to the information system overall? I can't promise it. Let me just find out why.
Well, one of the things, just to respond to that myself, one of the tricky bits, I think, would be that the push button information that's at the Silver Spring Transit Center, if I'm not mistaken, that's static information, right? That's
right.
So this bus stops here.
Yes.
Have a nice day. It's not, this bus will be here in 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Correct.
I get the bus up at Columbia Heights sometimes. It's that circulator, and there's several buses running across, this is Irving Street. And you push the button, it tells you the circulator will be here in 1 minute.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Something will be here in 3 minutes. They go all the way up to 4 hours later almost.
So that does have, I'm sorry, so that does have rotating information that's
there are some bus stops. That's what we have.
Okay.
We have them in Baltimore. I don't know everywhere. We have them here over here in D.C. So the technology is possible.
Sure.
At least when it comes to buses. I've seen it with buses in terms of a push button on a platform for rail service. I haven't seen it, but like I said, I'm going to put it on my menu and let's see, because there have been brilliant people way before me, and let's see why hasn't this ever been tried, or if it has been tried, what were the challenges?
Well, one of the things, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Thank you for giving us those examples. One of the things I think I remember many times we talked about this issue. One of the things that was brought up is the acoustical challenges. A lot of our stations are big and booming, and there's a lot of stuff going on at once, and especially during rush hour. And there may be some from a listening perspective, a challenge in getting that information out there in a way that's audible, in a way that's clear, in a way that's makes sense given sometimes the barely controlled chaos that goes on during rush hour on the platforms. I know that was a conversation we had way back. That's not a technological problem necessarily, but it is something to think about. And so that came to mind when you were talking about the push button notion and the on demand option, I guess I would call it. Some of that extra audio stuff wouldn't necessarily be in the mix unless somebody needed it. And again, that does kind of get to a little bit of that philosophical notion that you mentioned, Chris, earlier. That's something that the committee wanted to think about before advocating that versus all announcements all the time option.
Can I please,
Doris, go ahead.
Okay, technology this has to do with things that are here locally. Down in Roslyn, there's NetBus technology that's all signs, right? And thank the Lord, it's in LED signs for many of us, and they're quite large. But there's no audible, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, we have a lot of text-to-speech, and audio technology. Why can't that be added together with kind of like the technologies that are used on ATMs, for example, the instructions, when you address an ATM as a blind person, there's a jack there and a lot of people have headphones with them. And you plug the headphone in and there is a rotation of information, but you get all your instructions and everything, and your feedback. It is interactive when you start using machines. So I guess my question is: it seems like some of these things are out there, and there's signs at Roslyn, and and so they're obviously electronic, and I keep wondering, you know, why we cannot do something like that at the other bus bays, for example. You know, because it's real critical because, you know, we're talking about places where it's an hour or 45 minutes or an hour before you might be able to get the next bus, and you are at a decision point about whether to drive a cab or blah, blah, blah. And so it seems like there's some possibilities out there to be. Oh, the other technology I'm aware of is sitting in the Arlington County Administration Building at 2700 Clarendon Boulevard are these display signs, and they give sighted people and they're on some of these things that are like similar to advertising signs, by the way, and they give people next bus information for all the buses in the ARC and the metro buses that are, you know, outside that building. And so it seems to me that there should be an easy way to provide that audibly with some kind of jack or whatever it is. And if you were able to get over that electronic thing, there should be some way to be able to tap in something similar into the platform bits.
Thank you, Doris. Tony and Philippa, and I think then anyone who hasn't spoken, I want to give them a chance to speak, and then we'll wrap this up. So everyone, we're not necessarily out of time, but anymore. I think we've been a pretty free-ranging and a good conversation about this. Just one thing I will say, you know, before I do turn to Tony and Philippa, about that, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, you know, the notion of the plug-in jack and, you know, the best technology of the 1990s that we ready to pair on this, which is to say that this stuff's been around a long time and we're still grappling with it, is that, you know, when you're in a commute situation, you know, and I think Tony also spoke to this, is that you're walking toward the platform, walking into the station, you know, most people don't want to stop, take time, find something you got to plug into, push a button, wait for some information to queue up. You know, meanwhile, six trains have gone by, and you know, you're pissed in, right? So just thinking about how that works in real time. I mean, I like to get down the platform. What's going on? And with the BART system, for example, again, I can hear the announcement and knew what my situation was going into it. Okay, I know I got 5 minutes to wait. Oh, I got 15 minutes. I can chill out of here and chat with a friend. Yeah, having that real-time information that's right there is just makes for a higher quality commute in general. So, Tony, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And taking on what you said, kind of going back to what I said earlier, I mean, it helps everybody in a sense.
Yes.
And especially on weekends, the hardest thing in the stomach to bear is thinking, 5 seconds, I could have got on that train, and now I have to wait 20 minutes. You know, so I'm a fan as well as the real time. A question I have for you, Mr. Blake, and this is kind of a favorite for me, because I wasn't totally aware of the things, and Doris, maybe what they were talking about earlier, what Denise was talking about earlier, at Silver Spring, and also on the circulator, I guess at Columbia Heights, you said, Denise, was that right? Was that Denise that mentioned that?
Philippa,
I'm sorry, Philippa, what you mentioned at Columbia Heights, Philippa. You know, I'd be curious, Mr. Blake, and Mr. Chair, if we could maybe have this worked into the agenda, it doesn't have to be next month, but sometime in the near future, specifically more information on those machines. How much do they cost? What the devices at the Silver Spring station?
Okay.
And give us an estimate. And then what are the things stopping us from if next bus can go on that information? Can be fed into that? Or how is the information fed into those devices? What keeps next train from doing that? So I'd just be curious to know more about these, and if we could maybe in the future focus specifically on that for a few minutes, that would be wonderful.
We'll do. We'll do that next month. We can work on it if that's what we want to do.
Sure. I mean, I agree. You know, without objection, I think it'd be nice to even just a brief presentation or discussion about what that technology brings and what it offers, and we'll maybe be able to deal with it. Anybody?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a quick clarification. I was kind of thinking of a push button in tandem with the system, the PID system on the mezzanine, so that people would know before they entered the system if there was an elevator outage or anything else that might impact them. But I do like the real time the best.
Thank you, Felipe. Dernice, and then anybody who hasn't spoken, we'll give them a chance, and then we'll wrap up. I think Dernice, go ahead.
In D.C., the Friendship Heights line has those audible push button, tell you the time the bus comes and all that. They had that on the line, especially up near GW, up in that area.
And these are metro bus.
Metro bus. They're built to the bus shelter.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you very much, Jeremy. That's interesting. I think that's interesting to most of us here. anybody who hasn't spoken yet, you would like to add anything to this this conversation, and then I'll see if Chris has any final thoughts. Anybody who hasn't spoken yet. Okay. Mr. Leggett, any final thoughts you want to share before we close out this conversation for the moment?
No, I've got some homework to do, and we're going to continue to move this ball forward and do our very best to do so.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks to everyone on the committee for the ideas, the thoughts, and also for keeping this issue on the front burner. This is something we've talked about for a long time. There's lots of things out there we can look at and talk about, but that I think it's time to start making some real advances. So, and the display, Dr. B and my co-chair reminded me that the display will be available for us to check out in the main lobby, right?
No, actually, within the
room. Oh, right here in the room. Okay.
It's in the room, by the door.
So, till the end of the meeting, and then it goes away, apparently. So, wrap up in a few minutes earlier if you give people a chance to check it out. Great. Thank you very much. And now Mr. Sandi is probably gone, but just for the record, thanks to Mr. Sandi for his time.
Yeah, he's still here.
He's still here. All right, excellent.
We have until 5:25.
Oh, well, that's true. We do. Well, thank you very much for coming and talking to us and giving us an update. Appreciate that. Okay, so I think the next item is new business. I don't know what that new business is exactly, but maybe some carrier from our last AEC meeting, I think. I don't know if Dr. B or Mr. Blake, or you, do you have some new business you want to, or was there something that came up about before I got here?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
okay.
Right.
Darnie had something.
Sure, Darnie, go right ahead, please.
I'd just like you to know that this is the 26th year of ADA this year.
All right.
26 years.
Yeah. That's what, July 26th? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do we have any other new business?
Doris has her hand up. Doris.
Again, Doris, please go ahead.
I was sitting here thinking that this is somewhat related to, in a way, to what we're talking about. I think at some point we need to discuss telephone usage of the customer service information about bus schedules and routes, and vis-a-vis also the next bus system, which is not fully accessible, and it's not accessible at the stop. But I think there are some cumbersome things about the way the automated call-up service works when you're trying to get bus information. For example, they've been on a line, the 4AB line, where there's more than one bus. Also, you know, where there's an A and a B. Okay, and if I'm trying to find out the next scheduled arrival time,
I have to go through the system and ask for 4A, and then I have to go start over again to ask for the 4B, which seems to me just the logic of it is beyond me. So what I'm suggesting is that I don't know whether this can be a future topic, but I think that kind of thing, looking at whether there can be modifications on programming to make it easier for somebody who's, you know, calling in and using the automated system in the times when you when the customer service call center isn't open, particularly since it's open much less now than it used to be, would be helpful, because otherwise it's very frustrating to use that.
Okay.
Thank you, Doris. I mean, I've been thinking actually in recent weeks and months about the right guide automated phone system for Metro service. I sometimes use that when other things aren't available, and I find it to be, frankly, very antiquated, and it doesn't seem like it's been updated as a system since I moved here 10 years ago, frankly. And I don't know if we consider that an accessibility issue or not, but it's certainly, as a person with a disability using the system, and you use this kind of service, I find it to be very cumbersome and very not particularly agile in the information it gives out. So I don't know if others have had experiences, but then if there's maybe particular issues with folks with communicative disorders or auditory or other sensory disabilities that may have challenges with that, maybe worth exploring. But it doesn't seem as though that system to me has been updated in a very long time. It's almost like, you know, the system that time forgot, and it's just sort of, you know, it's there on the phone, but I don't know, you know, if anybody's even checking to see if it works. So I don't know what the rest of the committee thinks about that. If that's something we want to explore here in the subcommittee, or if you want to hear more about that.
No, I'm thinking it's a programming issue. You know, it's a code or whatever is the logic of the coding. So maybe somebody can come and talk about that and why it's the way it is. And I'm probably specifically, you know, it may be similarly cumbersome if you're using it on a computer, but if you're using it in real time for quick information, you know, call it up. It can be a way to get information quickly, and I've seen people out on the line using the call-in. So.
Great, thank you, Doris. Anyone else from the committee have any thoughts about that?
Tony,
go right ahead. Thank you.
I mean, I think it'd be worth us talking about it some in the future. If I had my Christmas list now, going back to what you talked about, the Obama components, I think the Lifeline program in the hands of more and more people. Although there are pushbacks about smartphones, but honestly, a lot of us make those calls on our cell phones when we're waiting at stops trying to figure out, you know, where the bus ID number is and all that stuff is. Wouldn't it be great if there was a text? That way, not, you don't even have to have a smartphone, but a free text. Where I texted a number and with my smart ID, and bam, it gave me all the information. Or a stop, a train stop, you know, something like that. And then boom, I got a text back right away instead of having to call a number, figure out what my ID is and all that. So, that's my thought. And I had another issue to talk about offline. Well, not offline, just other business. But that can wait.
Okay, thank you. So I don't know if you want to see if maybe we can get something scheduled in the next few months to talk about how that system works and how it may work better for people with disabilities who need that service.
Yes, sir. I'm adding that to your work plan.
Thank you very much, Mia. So, Tony, you did have another item that you wanted to bring up?
Unfortunately, I wasn't at the meeting last week, and it may have been a 2-hour session complaining about the weather. Was it, out of curiosity?
There was discussion about snow removal.
Not to focus in on that, but a question I had, because even my sighted wife was on the WMATA page. Did it come up at all about the emergency bus routes and better understanding that information online that's in text format that can better explain what the maps mean and what individual spots mean. Because that was an issue I had during the loop, was trying to figure out which direction do I go to find which bus that's working. And just, I think it would have been very helpful if there was better text description of even having someone describe, try to figure out what the map meant. If it was an emergency or whatever, the system was determining what level of emergency it was for the changes in bus routes.
Thank you. Yeah, I noticed that as well, Tony, that you know, some of the updates would say, you know, look at this map for emergency bus routes. And, you know, those of us can see the maps.
But even the sign person was confused.
Even sign person was confused, yeah. So I don't know if that's something that we could look into exploring.
Have that also to the agenda.
Yeah, because we're making one bus into here, because, yeah, now this one, I won't even pretend to have a good answer for you on this one. Even at a very bus-centric service like Baltimore's MTA, which is nowhere near the rail service that Metro is, these type of things happen and you're like, okay, where is this bus going? I ride it every day. Now today there's weather, but no one knew. I mean, we could never figure it out. There's somebody out there, there's some genius at every agency that knows exactly where the emergency routes are and what the stops are, what the schedule is. The challenge is finding who that person is. But we're going to bring in the leadership of bus and let's try to figure that out. And I think that could be, there's always the snow removal, and we did talk about that. But if we can really show a way as one of the takeaways from this season going forward of true information, very clear, basic information of where buses run and don't run during emergencies. I think that would be a great takeaway. And then again, it won't just benefit people with disabilities, this will benefit all of us. Yes, that's a great idea.
I concur. Excellent. That'd be terrific. Well, we may yet have more weather before this thing's all done.
Like tomorrow.
Exactly. So, excellent. Thank you very much, Tony. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Blake, for picking that up and helping us with that. Marissa, you have something.
I'm sorry. This is not technically bus rail, but I have an issue, and I don't know if it was just me. When we had the major snowstorm, it was most recent. Metro was obviously shut down for a little bit, but my problem is I noticed that Metro actually ended up running limited service on Wednesday. My issue was that I needed to get someone on my dad, and I knew they were running, but I couldn't get a hold of anything Tuesday at any point to be able to attempt to take advantage of Wednesday. Was that something one or? Because I know some vehicles were out at certain places and there was really somewhere that I needed to attempt to get and I couldn't get a hold of anybody.
Thank you, Rizzo. Does anybody know if that was brought up? Will be brought up maybe next week?
Oh, okay. I just want some clarification because and I'm not Metro Access, as you know, but we're all on the same team. So my understanding was the limited service was Friday evening, meaning that we were not, if you were calling, going back to my McDonald's analogy, if you were calling to go to McDonald's and then you also had a trip, let's say you called Thursday because you want to go to McDonald's that Friday evening and then a return trip home. Those trips, the outbound trips late Friday afternoon, were not honored. Those trips, we were just bringing people back home because of the impending weather. Wednesday's service on Metro Access, I believe, resumed on Wednesday at 12 o'clock. But that was full service.
My issue was I couldn't get through to anybody on Tuesday and anyone to even to make a ride for my
I got you. You're saying you were having challenges getting into our call center.
I couldn't get anybody to answer, and I'm not holding it as a reason for saying that it was really somewhere I needed to attempt to get to.
No, and I'm not considering it major or minor. I mean, I think it's a fair complaint. If we were taking reservations, you should have been able to reach someone. So that is a question I think you should save for next week and raise it with the staff who will be here.
And I know I just wanted to bring it up here to see if I was the only one.
Does anyone else on the committee
have
any
experience?
Are you seeing my speed to that at all?
Yes, but the call center was open, but you had to call the one office.
I couldn't even get anybody to hear. It just kept ringing and ringing during normal business hours.
Yeah, but you get it on a very long time.
May have been a system overload at the doors that you...
Especially early in the morning.
I just wanted to find out that I wasn't the only one, because I didn't want to bring it up next week and have people on the day.
No, I'm sorry. I think Ed has a comment as well.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Ed. Sorry. Ed, go ahead.
No, I know this is not, you know, you should do it next week, Metro Access, but that Friday, all your public service announcements were saying service would discontinued at 5 p.m. And I had a trip that was scheduled at 1:30 in the afternoon. Not a return trip, it was just one way. And fortunately, I made some other arrangements without knowing it. And I went to co-op, not to co-op, I went in the computer to cancel the trip. You guys already canceled it.
And this was the management of Metro Access that actually handles the operations will probably give you a better answer than me. But you're saying the trip you had scheduled that was already canceled, was it a trip to your home?
No, I went to a hotel.
Right, yeah.
For the weekend. So
and I think, now that's a good point, because let's say you don't know, you don't want to trip home. You want to go somewhere where you're going to be comfortable and safe during this environment. And what happens when we cancel those type of trips?
Yeah.
I think that's a very fair point for my colleagues as well. And I'll give them a heads up to it, but I think that's a very fair point to raise next week as well.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to bring it up next week.
They actually announced that they were running trips until 6 o'clock on that Friday, and then they canceled.
And again, I'll just clarify. I thought the thing what we were doing to 6 o'clock was making sure we brought everybody home and not taking anybody else back up. But that's next week. I'll leave that to my college teacher. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. Thank you for asking for that. Yes, Dr.
This is me. I wanted to, before we ran completely out of time, I wanted to share something about two members of the AAC, our very own Anthony Stevens and Brianna Berger, who is not here today, has appeared in a Metro TV program that we want to make sure we share. But before I share, I want Anthony, who is here, to talk a little bit about his experience, and then I want to show everyone a piece of the show and then Anthony's segment. Go ahead.
That's cool.
I hate
talking about myself.
We'll talk about the guy in the picture.
Thank you. It was a good opportunity. It was a good opportunity. For me, it was a reminder. I tried to stay positive. But, you know, so I didn't lambast with people that don't make room for Palmer, my daughter, when I get on the train. I hope maybe they'll watch it and feel guilty if I get on the train. They'll remember how nice everyone else is. So that was kind of my motive. Not complaining or anything, but it was a good opportunity and a reminder that there are many of us who do rely on fixed routes. So.
Yes, I'm queuing it up, and just forgive me, because it is captioned, so for those that need to see it there, it's called Metro Focus. We're going to be having these segments on a regular basis, and it is about the destinations that are along the metro route, and then also we just talk generally about travelers and people and stuff you might meet. So you'll get a little introduction, and then I'm going to move it down to where Anthony's piece is.
It will take you behind the scenes of a few great destinations. Metro proudly serves by rail and bus. Answer a few questions for your riders and introduce you to some of the commuters you might meet along the way.
Hi, I'm Lana Monroe with Metro Focus TV. Today we are in Georgetown at the well-renowned Georgetown Cupcakes. I'm sitting here with owner Sophie. Thank you so much, Sophie, for having us.
So I'm going to stop there, and then I'm going to take it all the way down to where Anthony is on his piece, where he actually begins. And again, this is just, it's on YouTube now, and I'll make sure we send the link out to everyone, but I want to show the piece that he actually had done.
Cupcakes was much more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're still getting interesting.
It's talking a little bit, now this shows some of the first responders and stuff that members have participated in.
Me and Turn 7 Police K-9 there. The K-9 indicated that there was something definitely suspicious there.
Set up to overload shot.
Called in our explosive ordnance disposal team, or UMD. They came in, x-rayed the package, and deemed it suspicious.
Well, see, the package got to be sitting on the ground, doesn't it?
And then they disrupted it.
Track 2, forward, go ahead. I got turned on the 800 and approached Silver Spring. Third car back, report flames.
The train came across the scope.
Are three people on the train that are visually impaired?
It is a fire on the third car. Let's go back and investigate.
The fire department did an evacuation. They evacuated 55 customers for that incident along the right way.
The one with the dog walk.
I got permission to walk with this town quick.
Just let us know when you're clear. You got everybody out of private secondary searches of the train car are negative. The last of the five occupants are on their way out now.
These drills are very important, not just to Metro Armada, but also to the group. It brings all the first responders together, interacting with the police department, the fire department, Metro operations, and getting everybody lockstep so if and when these incidents occur, we're better off for them. And the drills help prepare us for those days, unfortunately, that do happen sometimes, but I think the things we have to continue to strive on is communication, not just internally, externally, obviously, with our riders, how situations like this have a ripple effect on the system and how they're impacted down the line. So it's really communication is one thing we always strive for, unified command, accountability, those are all the things objective we're always trying to meet each one of these drills.
Yeah, that was the emergency piece.
Yeah, but it was for your. It's nice to hear just the drawing here to help all the lines.
You did display some members of this as well. Your piece is coming up next.
This is groovy sound very available before I
My name is Tony Stevens, and this is Palmer. I'm a father, an advocate. I'm married and have two young sons, a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I'm a daily rider of Metro. I'm originally from Atlanta, but we moved down here 5-6 years ago from New York City. I work for a nonprofit in Virginia that focuses on advocacy for people who are blind, and so I do a lot of work up on Capitol Hill and with different coalitions for disability issues in outside the Beltway. I pretty much ride Metro every day. I definitely am a rail person. You know, the bus is nice and convenient. There's nothing more nice than on a nice, cold, snowy day, you get on one of those really nice, warm buses with the heat blasting out. But, you know, when we were looking for a place to live, we wanted to be as close to the rail as we could, just mainly for reliability, for convenience, you don't worry about traffic. Moving down from New York City, where the city so, you know, sort of accessible via rail. We wanted something similar when we moved down to Washington. One of the things about being blind is, you know, I can't drive a car. I have to rely on, you know, bus or rail. I don't use metro access. I try to be as independent as I can. So pretty much I use rail or bus to really do all I can to get anywhere I need to go throughout the district. I take the kids out. We go on adventures on weekends. I like my boys to know how to use public transit and to know that, you know, it's something that they can also maybe do when they get older. You don't have to have a car to be able to get around. So we pretty much use public transit for everything to get around in the town. One of the things about transportation is you really interact with people on a daily basis. I'm constantly humbled and pleased by a sense that people are very accommodating on the trains. You know, when I get on and I have my dog, people are constantly saying, you know, do you want a seat here? Or this train's going to, you know, Greenbelt, or this train's going to Virginia or Branch Avenue or wherever it is. You know, people are always willing to help, especially the conductors when they're, you know, walking to and from the platform. They're always good to tell me what train is what. You know, it's very rare that I'll get on a train and I get kind of a silent person sitting in the seat that refuses to move. You know, that's the exception, not the rule. Palmer here, he's pretty good with transit. He was trained up in New York City, so he knows how to get on the subway. He knows how to ride buses. You know, one of the hardest things about the animal is that people constantly want to come up and pet him. And when he's in harness, he's on the clock. He's working. The nice thing is that when we get home, the harness comes off and he gets to be a dog again. And he gets to play with the kids and run through the backyard. You know, for me, it's not just a way of life, because since I can't drive a car, you know, it's kind of a philosophy as well. I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, not only people who can not drive a car have to rely on it. I'd like to think that public transportation is important for everybody. You know, the more we use it, the better it is on the environment, the better it is, you know, to just reduce traffic and to make it easier. It brings people together. You know, it makes us not isolated in a box. All in all, I think that transportation, for me, is a thing for independence. You know, it's important to be able to find a job that's near transportation for me. Otherwise, you know, how, you know, the choices are greatly limited. So the places I choose to live have to be accessible, and the places I choose to work have to be accessible. So without transportation, that shuts the whole puzzle down, and, you know, it really affects the quality of life.
Thanks for riding with us at Metro Focus. In our next edition, we'll visit the old and new in Northern Virginia.
Well done, Dylan. And after me, you'll send out a link to the whole committee so they can...
Absolutely. We'll send out a link to that one. And then when the one for Brianna, who shot hers this morning today, when hers is done and available and posted, then we will share hers as well.
Excellent. That's terrific. Thank you very much for bringing that to us. It really good. That was great. All right. And one more time. Love that soundtrack. I was just up in New York yesterday, yeah, Tony. Anyway, if there's no other business, Doris, you got something? All right.
Yeah, I have two things.
Two things?
One was before.
It is
the video, but I want to make a comment about the video. When doing these videos, I wish you would take back the comment that the person with hearing impairment, you really need to watch out about the background music. Because getting two signals like that can make it difficult to hear. Now, Chinese peas seem mostly okay because, you know, because of his very beautiful resonant voice and good quality of it. But, for example, the piece on the emergency thing, the music that was going on in the background was made at times not easy for someone to hear in there to hear the voice.
Thank you, Doris. We have interpreters that only have a few more minutes, so can you wrap that
okay.
up?
Okay, the second thing is that I wanted to say that was that today,
This is for the first time in 5 weeks that I've used the rail system. And I want to say that I was extremely conscious because of a broken foot and even a shock pain of the gap. And I think we need to find some further solutions because some of the gaps are really
good. Doris, do you mean a vertical or horizontal gap?
I mean the gap between the train and the platform.
Okay, thank you.
And the distance, some of the gaps. Because actually, even before I had this accident, there have been a number of times when I've been getting off at the house and tripped over the edge of the. And it was just because I guess I wasn't picking up my feet high enough to accommodate the edge of the train and the ground.
Thank you very much, Doris. I think that those are the topics we continue to pursue. And if there is feedback for the videos that we sent out the link, maybe we can send those around in writing and share with each other just to help out. Thanks everybody for the conversation today. Barring any objection, any motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Seconded. Thank you, Marissa. All those in favor, please give me a sign of aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, adjourn. Thanks, everybody.